From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, which recognizes the importance of Alaska's sustainable fisheries to the state's economy.
The Cook Inlet salmon fishery was once an economic engine for Kenai. But the fishing there is no longer lucrative. Many fishermen with deep ties to the inlet are retiring or moving elsewhere. Sabine Pooks visited a crew of Cook Inlet fishermen as they were finishing up a record-breaking season on the other side of the Alaska Peninsula in Bristol Bay.
The Nidra E is smaller than the other boats bobbing at the dock in Naknek. Thor Evenson didn't have Bristol Bay in mind when he designed the boat for his parents, Nikiski homesteaders Jim and Nidra Evenson. Until last year, she's been a Cook Inlet boat, captained by Jim, then his nephew, and now his grandson, 32-year-old Taylor Evenson. Taylor grew up hearing about the heyday of Cook Inlet fishing from his dad and his friends.
And, just getting up in the morning every day and hearing their voice on the radio, voices I grew up with from the first time I was on the boat, I was 3 months old. So, I mean, the voices of these 20 guys, and then particularly hearing my dad's voice, going out and fishing with my dad, that's why I never left the inlet, even though I always knew what was coming.
What came was a drop in salmon runs and a change in how fishing is managed in the inlet that has made it hard for fishermen like the Evensons to make a living there. Last year, Taylor couldn't put it off any longer, so with the help of the boat's original builder, he gutted everything behind the cabin, chopped several inches off bow and stern, and installed a brand new deck to bring the Nidra E in line with Bristol Bay standards. Now, he says, it's time to make his own glory days.
This is the only place really to do that if it was going to be gill netting in Alaska. You want to set one? Looks like about time.
It must be the 500th set the crew of the Nidra E has cast this season. Their hands are sore from picking so much salmon off the net, sometimes as much as 28,000 pounds in 24 hours. 22-year-old deckhand Riley Randles of Soldotna has never seen anything like it.
You're living off of naps, and you never catch a break, ever. Time just means nothing at that point.
He says it's the Super Bowl of fishing. You can't get that kind of fishing in Cook Inlet anymore. Yeah. Scientists haven't been able to nail down one reason for the change in the run, and the fishery has become fraught with politics as conflict between managers and user groups builds. Meanwhile, business has dropped off in the inlet. 30 years ago, an average salmon drift permit for the Cook Inlet fishery was worth over $200,000. Last year, it was worth just $25,000. But fishing Cook Inlet has never been just about the money for the Evensons. Jim and Nidra, who both died in the last year, started fishing the inlet when they moved to Kenai in 1955. Jim was the first president of the local drift association, and he and his son are well-known Kenai artists who've made fishing a large theme in their work. Taylor says he's heartbroken to leave his family's fishing heritage behind. But he'd be heartbroken to stay, too.
And so as far as me moving west here, it's what I have to do to make a living, what I have to do to feel good about fishing, because I would stop. It's too depressing to fish in Kenai. It is depressing.
It's night and day from the energetic Bristol Bay, which is shattering salmon records. It hit its largest sockeye run on record this season. Those incredible catches make it hard for Georgie Heverly of Nikiski to imagine only fishing Cook Inlet again. After almost 3 weeks deckhanding on the Nidra E, the 33-year-old fisherman is flying back to Anchorage with a suitcase of dirty fishing clothes and a new perspective.
This season and seeing what Bristol Bay is about and seeing what fishing actually looks like, I just don't know how I could not be in Bristol Bay.
This was Heverly's first season without her dad since becoming a commercial fisherman. She and Taylor talked about their dads when they were on the boat.
This is what he used to see when he fished. He used to see fish hit the net like this. He used to fish like this. Like, dad saw this.
Heverly resisted heading to Bristol Bay for a while. She didn't want to leave family behind, and it's also a big investment to make the move between the permits and boat upgrades. But last year was so bad in Cook Inlet that it put a strain on her relationship with her father. She felt it was time to follow other young fishermen west.
I will have children someday, and I want them to be the children of fishermen. And how do we do that? We come to Bristol Bay, because that's all that's left. And I wish that we could be fishermen in Cook Inlet, because that is home. But we just can't.
Still, she wants to fight for the fishing in Cook Inlet. It's been a bitter fight through court cases and Board of Fish battles. User group pitted against user group, scrabbling for a slice of the resource. Taylor says an us versus them mentality is partially what's led to the decline of the Cook Inlet fishery and the local commercial fishing lifestyle.
I think that our generation, people like Georgie and I, who have grown up in the heart of the fish wars, which is an accurate statement, have seen that it's like the detriment. It's to the detriment of everyone. And really, it's to the detriment of the resource. That's what it ultimately comes down to in this whole thing.
Both Taylor and Heverly say they want the new generation to build bridges between user groups to find a better balance. Taylor's part of a group of salmon fellows through the Alaska Humanities Forum. Heverly tunes into state fisheries policy and advocates for younger fishermen to join the conversation, too. She's also a poet. Her poem, The One Cent Man, is about Cook Inlet. She wrote it from the boat at the end of last year's season.
And there's that one verse, and it sums it up, and it's, "And now the children migrate west to waters rich with gold. The nets they cast now fill up fast, boats and permits sold."
She says she's considering buying into the bay, but she's not going to give up on Cook Inlet. Not yet. In Naknek, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, reliably delivering for Kodiak since 1964.
The wreck of the St. Patrick recently began oozing an oily sheen from its resting place on the bottom of Women's Bay in Kodiak. It made me think back to the summer of 1981. I was among waves of hungry, hungry hippies that swarmed off the Tustamina that year to camp in abandoned bunkers and work in the busy canneries of Kodiak. And when we weren't backing crab at Smokewa Shell, a bunch of us would pile into Tony Buny's Datsun truck and drive out to the rendezvous when it was way off down the road. One day, as we careened past the Coast Guard base, I asked Tony about a dark listing hull moored in the bay. Tony spit out the window and called it the Death Boat. And as we barreled down that dusty road, he told me this story. The St. Patrick was a scalloper from the East Coast that had arrived in Kodiak only the year before. During a big storm in December in Marmot Bay, a wave knocked out some wheelhouse windows and killed the engines, leaving the boat dark, listing, and rolling alarmingly in the trough. Believing the St. Patrick was about to sink, the inexperienced skipper ordered the crew to abandon ship. Unfortunately, they had 12 people on board, but only 9 survival suits, some of which leaked. Compounding this, the life raft floated away before anyone could climb into it. Nevertheless, believing their boat was doomed, they all went into the churning water on that dark night. Those without survival suits succumbed quickly to hypothermia. But 12 hours later, when a local pilot spotted the still drifting St. Patrick and its wayward life raft, the rest of the crew were still floating alive in the water nearby. And when the St. Patrick was towed back to town, empty as a ghost ship later that afternoon, they floated in the wide Marmot Bay water undetected. For the next day and a half, while searchers scanned the seas in vain, they floated. Ultimately, only two of the 12 managed to crawl up onto the rocky beach of Marmot Island to be rescued. After that, the St. Patrick sat anchored in Women's Bay, just outside of town, a bitter black reminder of needless tragedy. When it sank to the bottom years later, it was a relief, like a dark spirit that had moved on. And in many ways, we have moved on from those days. In the years between 1980 and 1988, Alaska in general had the highest death rate among U.S. workers, with 34.2 deaths per 100,000 workers, compared to the national average of 7.8. The five-year average annual fishing fatality rate for Alaskans for that period was 414.6 fatalities per 100,000. It was stats like that that caused Congress to pass the Commercial Fishing Industry Vessel Safety Act in 1988. As it was implemented in the 90s, survival suits, life rafts, and emergency radio beacons were mandated. It also granted the Coast Guard the authority to establish the Dockside Safety Inspection Program. These exams are now required of all fishing vessels that operate outside 3 miles. And Alaska has become a leader in safety training for the fishing industry. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association has trained over 200,000 commercial fishermen and mariners since 1985, including 1,600 instructors. They are now a national leader in marine safety training. The proof, as they say, is in the pudding. In the 30 years during which the Commercial Fishing Industry Vessel Safety Act has been implemented, commercial fishing fatalities in Alaska have decreased by nearly 70%. Over time, vessel disasters have accounted for an ever-decreasing proportion of marine fatalities. The proportion attributed to fatal onboard injuries is on the increase, due largely to the increasing incidence of suicides and unintentional drug overdoses.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.